Althea's letter ended. The world of life needs you, Friedrich. Your part in this has yet to begin. I beg of you that when you are called upon, you will fulfill that purpose. Yours for eternity, Althea. Friedrich wiped the tears from his cheeks and then read Althea's words again. When he read, he could hear her voice in his head speaking to him, almost as if she were right there beside him. He feared to let go of that voice, but at last he carefully folded the note and returned it to his pocket. When he looked up, a tall man was standing before him. I was an acquaintance of Althea's. His powerful voice was solemn and earnest. I'm terribly sorry for your loss. I came to pay my respects and to offer my sympathy. Friedrich slowly rose to his feet, watching the older man's dark, azure eyes. How could you know? How do you know what happened? Friedrich's anger rose, too. What part have you played in this? The part of a sad witness to that which I cannot change. The man, much older but vigorous-looking, laid a hand on Friedrich's shoulder, squeezing in a gentle manner. I knew Althea from long ago, when she came to study at the Palace of the Prophets. You didn't answer my question, how did you know? I am Nathan, the prophet. Nathan, the prophet? Nathan Rawl? Wizard Rawl? The man nodded as he took his hand away, letting his arms slip back under the edge of his open, dark brown cape. Friedrich dipped his head out of deference, but couldn't muster the concern to do more to bow, even if he was in the presence of a wizard, even if this wizard was a Rawl. The man wore brown wool trousers and high boots, not the robes of a wizard. For the most part, he didn't look like what Friedrich expected of a wizard, and he looked not at all like a man Althea had said was close to 1,000 years old. His strong jaw was clean-shaven. His straight white hair was long enough to touch his broad shoulders. He was not stooped with age, but had the fluid posture of a swordsman, though he wore no sword, and the effortless bearing of authority. His eyes, though, so piercing from under his hawkish brow, were what Friedrich would expect of such a man. They were the eyes of a Rawl. Friedrich felt a twinge of jealousy. This man knew Althea long before Friedrich had met her, back when she was young and exquisitely beautiful, a sorceress at the prime of her power and ability, a woman sought after, a woman courted by many a great man. A woman who knew what she wanted and went after it with fierce passion. Friedrich wasn't so naive as to believe he was the first man in her life. I spoke with her briefly a few times, Nathan said, as if in answer to questions unspoken, making Friedrich wonder if a man of his ability could also read minds. She had an exceedingly talented gift for prophecy, at least for a sorceress. Compared, though, to a true prophet, she was but a child trying to play at adult games. The wizard softened his words with a kindly smile. That is not to discount at all her heart or intellect, but merely to put it into perspective. Friedrich looked away from the man's eyes, back to the grave. Do you know what happened? When no answer came, he gazed back up at the tall man watching him. And if you knew, could you have stopped her? Nathan considered the question for a moment. Did you ever know Althea to be able to alter that which she saw when she cast her stones? I guess not, Friedrich admitted. A few times he had held her as she wept with the sorrow of wishing she could change something she saw. She had often told him, when he asked about it, or asked what could be done, that such things were not as simple as they seemed to those without the gift. While Friedrich couldn't understand many of the complexities of her ability, he did know that, at times, the burden of prophecy nearly crushed her with anguish. Do you know why she would have done this? Friedrich asked, hopeful for some explanation that might make the pain more bearable. Or who it was that brought her to it? She made the choice of how she would die, Nathan said in simple summation. You must trust that she made that choice of her own free will and for sound reasons. You must understand that what she did was not only done because it was the best for her and for you, but for others as well. Others? What do you mean? You both know what love brings to life. By her choice, she was doing what she could so that others might have their chance to know life and love. I still don't understand. Nathan gazed off distantly as he slowly shook his head. I know only bits of what is happening, Friedrich. In this, I feel blind in a way I have never felt before. You mean this has to do with Jensen? Nathan's brow twitched as his eyes focused abruptly and intently on Friedrich. Jensen? His voice was laced with suspicion. One of the holes in the world. Althea said that Jensen is a daughter of Darken Rall. The wizard drew back his cape and propped a hand on his hip. So, that was her name, Jensen. His mouth turned up with a private smile. I've never heard that term, hole in the world, but I can see how apt it would seem to a sorceress's restricted gift. He shook his head. Despite her talent, Althea couldn't begin to comprehend what is involved with those like Jensen. The inability of the gifted to recognize aspects of their existence, and so referring to them as a hole in the world, is but the tail of the bull. The tail is the least important part. Hole is not even really accurate. I should think void would be better. I'm not so sure you're right about her not comprehending. Althea was involved with those like Jensen for a long time. She may have been more aware than you realize. She explained it to Jensen and me that she didn't know anymore, but that the most important part was that the gifted were blind to them. Nathan grunted a short chuckle of respect for the woman buried before them. Oh, Althea knew more, much more. This hole in the world business was but window dressing for what Althea knew. Friedrich dared not contradict the wizard, for he knew how sorceresses kept secrets, never revealing the true extent of what they knew. Althea did this too, even to Friedrich. He knew that it wasn't a lack of respect or love, but just the way sorceresses were. He couldn't be offended by what was simply her nature. So there is more about those like Jensen, then? Oh, yes. This bull has horns, not just a tail, Nathan sighed. But despite the fact that I understand much of what Althea did not, even I don't begin to know enough to claim to grasp all of what is truly involved in the events beginning to unfold. This part of prophecy is obscured. I know enough, though, to know that this can alter the very nature of existence. You're a Rall. How could you not know of such things? At a very young age, I was taken away to the old world by the Sisters of the Light and imprisoned there in the Palace of the Prophets. I am a Rall, but in many ways I know little of my ancestral homeland of Dahara. Much of what I know, I learned through books of prophecy. Prophecy is silent about those like Jensen. I only recently have begun to discover why, and the dire consequences. He clasped his hands behind his back. So, this girl Jensen came to see Althea? How did she know of Althea? Yes, Jensen was the cause of... Friedrich's gaze fell away from the man watching him, not knowing how he would feel about his kinsman. But then he decided to say it, even if it brought the man's wrath. When Jensen was young, Althea tried to help protect her from Darken Rall. Darken Rall crippled Althea for it and imprisoned her in the swamp. He stripped her of her power, except for that of prophecy. I know, Nathan whispered, clearly in sorrow. Although I never knew the causes behind it, I saw some of it foretold. Friedrich took a step forward. Then why would you not help her? This time it was Nathan's gaze that broke away. Oh, but I did. I was imprisoned there at the palace of the prophets when she came to see me. Imprisoned for what? Imprisoned for the unjust fears of others. I am a rarity, a prophet. I am feared as an oddity, as a madman, as a savior, as a destroyer. All because I see things others don't. There are times when I cannot help but to try to change what I see. If it's prophecy, how can it be changed? If you changed it, it would be untrue. Then it wouldn't be prophecy. Nathan stared off at the cold sky, the wind lifting his long hair back away from his face. I could never explain it adequately to one such as you, one ungifted, but I can explain a small part of it in this way. There are books of prophecy going back thousands of years. Those books contain events that have not yet happened. In order for free will to exist, there must be questions left open. This is done partly through forked prophecies.
Forked prophecies? You mean that events could go in one of two ways?
Nathan nodded. At the least, often many ways. Key events, anyway. The books will often contain a line of prophecy for several outcomes that could result from free will. When a particular fork proves to be the one that actually takes place, one line of prophecy will be true while others, at that moment, become invalid. Up until then, they were all viable. Had another choice been made, that fork would have turned out to be the valid prophecy. Instead, that branch of prophecy withers and dies, even though the book with that line of prophecy remains. Prophecy is thus tangled with the deadwood of ages past, with all the choices not made, the things that never came to be. Friedrich's anger rose again.
And so you knew what would happen to Althea? You mean you could have warned her?
When she came to me, I told her of a fork. I didn't know when she would reach it, but I knew that death waited down both paths. With the information I gave her, she would be able to know when the time was at hand. I had hoped that somehow she could find a way around what I saw. Sometimes there are shrouded forks that we are unaware of. I was hoping that was the case this time, and she might find it if it existed.
Friedrich was incredulous. You could have done something. You might have prevented what happened.
Nathan lifted a hand toward the grave. This is the result of trying to change what will be. It does not work.
But maybe if...
Nathan's hawk-like glare rose in warning. For your own peace of mind, I will tell you this, but no more. Down the other path was a murder so torturous, so bloody, so painful, so violent, that when you discovered what was left of her, you would have ended your own life rather than continue to live with what you had seen. Be thankful that did not happen. It did not happen. Not because she feared that death more, but in part because she loved you and didn't want you to suffer that. Nathan gestured to the grave again. She chose this path.
This was that fork you told her of then?
Nathan's glare softened. Not exactly. The fork she took was that she would die. She chose how.
You mean she might have chosen another fork, a path in which she would live?
Nathan nodded. For a time. But had she chosen that path, we would all soon be in the Keeper's clutches. Because of those involved, I know only that down that path, everything ended. The choice she made was that there would still be a chance.
A chance? A chance for what?
Nathan sighed.
Friedrich suspected that the sign reflected things more grave, more sweeping, than anything Althea had ever seen.
Althea bought us all time that others might make the right choices when the time comes for them to act of their free will. This knot of forks in prophecy is obscured unlike any other, but most of the threads lead to nothing.
To nothing? I don't understand. What could that mean?
existence is at stake. Nathan's eyebrow lifted. Most of those prophecies end in a void, in the world of the dead, for everything. But you can see the way through? The tangle ahead is a mystery to me. In this I feel helpless. In this I know what it feels like to be ungifted and blind. In this I might as well be. I can't even see all of those who are making the critical choices. It must be Jensen. Maybe if you found her. But Althea said the gifted are blind to the ungifted offspring of Darkin Rall. Of any Rall. The gift is of no use in locating such truly ungifted offspring. There is no telling where they are. Unless you could gather all the people in the entire world and parade them before the gifted, there would be no practical way to detect them with the gift. Physical proximity is the only means for the gift to tell you who they are, because your eyes and your gift don't agree, like when I saw Jensen by accident. You think, then, that Jensen is somehow involved in this? Nathan threw his cape closed against the bitter wind. As far as the prophecies are concerned, those like Jensen don't even exist. I have no way of telling if there are others, and if there are, how many there might be. I have no idea what part any of them play in this. I know only that they somehow play a pivotal role. I know some of what is involved in some of those who will stand at critical forks in prophecy. As I said, though, many of those forks in prophecy are obscured. But you're a prophet, a true prophet, according to Althea. How could you not know what prophecy says if the prophecy exists? Nathan gauged him from behind intent azure eyes. Try to understand what I will tell you. It's a concept that few people can grasp. Perhaps it can help you in your grief, for it is the point at which Althea found herself. Friedrich nodded. Tell me, then. Prophecy and free will exist in tension. They exist in opposition, yet they interact. Prophecy is magic, and all magic needs balance. The balance to prophecy, the balance that allows prophecy to exist, is free will. That makes no sense. They would cancel each other. Ah, but they don't, the prophet said with a sly, knowing smile. They are interdependent, and yet they are antithetical. Just as additive and subtractive magic are opposite forces, they both exist. They each serve to balance the other. Creation and destruction, life and death. Magic must have balance to function. Prophecy functions by the presence of its counter, free will. You're a prophet, and you're telling me that free will exists, making prophecy invalid? Does death invalidate life? No, it defines it, and in so doing creates its value. In the silence, none of it seemed to matter. It was too hard for Friedrich to fathom just then. Besides, it changed nothing for him. Death had come to take Althea's precious life. Her life was all the value he had had. His anguish poured back in to flood everything else. For Friedrich, it had already all ended. There was nothing ahead but blackness. I came for another reason, Wizard Rall said in a quiet voice. I must call upon you to help in this struggle. Too tired to stand anymore, too grief-stricken to care, Friedrich sank back to the ground beside Althea's grave. You have come to the wrong person. Do you know where Lord Rall is? Friedrich looked up, squinting against the bright sky. Lord Rall? Yes, Lord Rall. You are Daharan, you should know. I guess I can feel the bond. Friedrich gestured off to the south. He's that way, but it's weak. He must be a great distance, greater than I've ever felt of a Lord Rall in all my life. That's right, Nathan said. He's in the old world. You must go to him. Friedrich grunted. I've no money for a journey.
It seemed the easiest reason. Nathan tossed down a leather pouch. It hit the ground before Friedrich with a heavy, muffled clunk.
I know. I'm a prophet, remember? This is more than was taken from you.
Friedrich tested the weight of the bag. It was indeed heavy.
Where did this come from? The palace. This is official business, so Dahara will supply you with the money you will need.
Friedrich shook his head.
I thank you for coming and offering your sympathy, but I'm the wrong man. Send another.
You are the man who is to go. Althea would have known it. She would have left you a letter telling you that you are needed in this struggle. She would have asked you to accept when called upon. Lord Rawl needs you. I am calling upon you.
You know of the letter? Friedrich asked, as he rose to his feet once more.
It's one of the precious few things I know about in this matter. From prophecy, I know you are the one to go. But you must do so of your own free will. I am calling upon you to do so.
Friedrich shook his head, this time with more conviction.
I'm not the one to do this. You don't understand. I'm afraid that I just don't care anymore.
Nathan drew something out from under his cloak. He held it out. Friedrich saw, then, that it was a small book.
Take it,
the wizard commanded, his voice suddenly full and rich with authority. Friedrich did so, letting his fingers roam the ancient leather cover as he inspected words embossed with gold leaf. There were four words on the cover, but Friedrich had never seen the language before.
This book is from the time of a great war thousands of years ago, Nathan said. I only just discovered it in the people's palace after a frantic search among the thousands of tomes there. As soon as I located it, I rushed here. I haven't had the time to translate it, so I don't even know what's written in it.
It's all written in a different language.
Nathan nodded. Hi, Daharan. A language I helped teach Richard. It's vitally important he get this book.
Richard?
Lord Rawl.
The way he said those two words gave Friedrich a chill.
If you've not read it, how do you know it's the right book?
By the title there on the front.
Friedrich ran his fingers lightly over the mysterious words. The gilding was still good after all this time.
May I ask the book's title?
The Pillars of Creation.
Chapter 41. Oba opened his eyes, but for some reason that didn't seem to help. He couldn't see. Dismay stiffened him. He was lying on his back on something like rough cold stone. It was a complete mystery to him as to where he could be or how he had gotten there. But his first and most important concern was that he had somehow gone blind. Trembling from head to foot, Oba blinked, trying to clear his vision, but still he could not see. A thought worse by far was what really ignited his panic. He wondered if he was back in the pen. He feared to move and prove the suspicion true. He didn't know how they had done it, but he despaired that those three conniving women, the troublesome sorceress sisters, and his lunatic mother, had somehow managed to once again lock him in his dark childhood prison. They had probably been plotting from beyond the grave, and in his sleep, they had pounced. Paralyzed by his plight, Oba couldn't gather his wits. But then he heard a noise. He turned his eyes toward the sound and saw movement. He realized as things came into focus that it was only some dark room and not his pen after all. Relief washed through him, followed by chagrin. What had he been thinking? He was Oba Rawl. He was invincible. It would serve him well to remember that. Though he was relieved to know it wasn't what he had at first feared, prudence kept him cautious. The place felt strange and dangerous. He concentrated, trying to recall what had taken place and how he could have come to be in such a cold, dark place, but it wouldn't come to him.
His memory was all foggy, just a collection of random impressions, dizzying illness, pounding headache, profound weakness and nausea, being carried, hands everywhere on him, light hurting his eyes, darkness. He felt battered and bruised. Someone nearby coughed. From another direction, a man grumbled at him to shut up. Oba lay still as a mountain lion, his muscles tensed. He worked at gathering his senses, letting his gaze carefully roam the dark room. It wasn't completely dark, as he had feared at first. On the wall opposite him, a weak light, possibly wavering candlelight, came in through a square opening. There were two dark vertical lines in the opening. Oba's head still pounded, but it was much better than it had been before. He remembered then how sick he had been. Looking back on it, he realized that he hadn't even grasped at the time how truly ill he had been. As a youngster, he'd had a fever once. This had been like that, he supposed, a fever. He had probably gotten it visiting Althea, the awful swamp witch. Oba sat up, but that made him feel lightheaded, so he leaned back against the wall. It was rough stone like the floor. He rubbed his cold, stiff legs, and then stretched his back. He wiped his knuckles across his eyes, trying to banish the lingering haze in his head. He saw rats, whiskers twitching, nosing along the edge of the wall. Oba was starving, despite the rank stench of the place. It smelled of sweat and urine, and worse.
"Look, the big ox is awake," someone across the room said.
The voice was deep and mocking. Oba peered up and saw men looking at him. Altogether, there were five others in the room with him. They looked a scruffy lot. The man who had spoken, off in the corner to the right, was the only other man beside Oba sitting. He leaned back into the corner, as if he owned it. His humorless grin showed that what teeth weren't missing were crooked as could be. Oba looked around at the other four men standing watching him. "You all look like criminals," he said. Laughter echoed around the room.
"We're all being wrongly persecuted," the man in the corner said.
"Yeah," someone else agreed. "We were minding our own business when those guards snatched us up and threw us in here for nothing at all. They locked us up like we was common criminals."
More laughter rang out. Oba didn't think he liked being in a room with criminals. He knew he didn't like being locked in a room. That felt too much like his pen. A cursory inspection proved his suspicion true. His money was gone. From across the room, under the crack of the door, a rat watched with beady little rat eyes. Oba looked up from the rat to the opening with a light. He saw then that the two lines were bars.
"Where are we?"
"In the palace prison, you big ox,"
Crooked Teeth said.
"Does it look like a proper whorehouse to you?"
The other men all laughed at his joke.
"Maybe the kind he visits," one of them said,
and the rest laughed all the louder. Over to the side, another rat watched.
"I'm hungry. When will they feed us?"
Oba asked.
"He's hungry,"
one of the standing men said in a taunting voice. He spat in disgust.
"They don't feed us unless they feel like it. You might starve first."
Another man squatted in front of him.
"What's your name?"
"Oba."
"What did you do to get yourself thrown in here, Oba? Rob an old maid of her virginity?"
The men guffawed with him. Oba didn't think the man was funny.
"I didn't do anything wrong," he said.
He didn't like these men. They were criminals.
"So you're innocent, huh?"
"I don't know why they would put me in here."
"We heard different," the man squatting before him said.
"Yeah,"
the keeper of the corner agreed.
"We heard the guards talking, saying that you beat a man to death with your bare hands."
Oba frowned in true bewilderment.
"Why would they put me in here for that? The man was a thief. He left me out in a desolate place to die after he'd robbed me. He only got what was coming to him."
"Says you,"
Crooked Teeth said.
We heard you was probably the one robbing him.
What?
Oba was incredulous, as well as indignant.
Who said that?
The guards, came the answer.
They're lying, then,
Oba insisted. The men started in laughing again.
Clovis was a thief and a murderer.
The laughter cut off. Rats stopped and looked up. They sniffed the air, their noses twitching. The keeper of the corner sat up straight.
Clovis? Did you say Clovis? You mean the man who sold charms?
Oba ground his teeth at the memory. He wished he could pound on Clovis some more.
That's the one. Clovis the hawker. He robbed me and left me for dead. I didn't kill him. I measured out justice. I should be rewarded for it. They can't imprison me for administering justice to Clovis. He deserved it for his crimes.
The man in the corner rose up. The other men closed in.
Clovis was one of us, Crooked Teeth said. He was a friend of ours.
Really?
Oba said.
Well, I pounded him to a bloody pulp. If I'd have had time, I would have cut some tender pieces off of him before I mashed his head.
Pretty brave for a big fellow when it comes to beating a hunched little man who's all alone,
one of the men said under his breath. Another one of the men spat at him. Oba's anger sprang to life. He reached for his knife, but found it missing.
Who took my knife? I want it back. Which one of you thieves stole my knife?
The guards took it,
Crooked Teeth snickered.
You really are a dumb oaf, aren't you?
Oba glared up at the man standing in the center of the room, fists at his sides, his crooked teeth making his lips look lumpy. The man's powerful barrel chest rose and fell with each seethed breath. His shaved head made him look to be a troublemaker. He took another step toward Oba.
That's what you are, a big oaf. Oba the oaf.
The others laughed. Oba simmered as he listened to the voice counseling him. He wanted to cut the tongues out of these men and then go to work on them. Oba preferred doing such things to women, but these men were earning it, too. It would be fun to take his time and watch them squirm, to make them cry, to watch the look in their eyes as death entered their convulsing bodies. As the men closed in around him, Oba remembered that he didn't have his knife, so he couldn't have the kind of fun he would have liked to. He needed to get his knife back. He was tired of this place. He wanted out.
Stand up, Oba the oaf.
Crooked Teeth growled. A rat scurried across in front of him. Oba slapped a hand down on its tail. The rat tugged and twisted, but couldn't get away. Oba snatched the furry thing up in his other hand. It wriggled, wrenching this way and that, trying to escape, but Oba had a good grip on it. As he stood, he bit off the rat's head. When he had reached his full height, a good head taller than Crooked Teeth, he glared into the eyes of the men around him. The only sound was bones crunching as Oba chewed the rat's head. The men backed away. Oba, still chewing, went to the door and peered out the barred opening. He saw two guards standing at the intersection of a nearby hall, talking quietly.
"You there!" he called out. "There has been a mistake. I need to speak with you."
The two men paused in their conversation.
"Oh, yeah? What's the mistake?"
one asked. Oba's gaze moved between the two, but it was not just his gaze. The gaze of the thing that was the voice also watched from within him.
"I am brother to Lord Rawl."
Oba knew that he was saying aloud what he had never said to a stranger before. But he felt compelled to do so. He was somewhat surprised to hear himself go on as everyone watched him.
"I am falsely imprisoned for measuring out justice to a thief, as is my duty. Lord Rawl will not stand for this false imprisonment. I demand to see my brother."
Oba glared at the two guards.
"Go get him!"
Both men blinked at what they saw in his eyes. Without further word, they left. Oba glanced back at the men locked in with him. As he met each man's eyes in turn, he gnawed a hind leg off the limp rat. They moved aside for him to pace as he chewed. Little rat bones crunch, crunch, crunching. He looked out the opening again, but saw no one else. Oba sighed. The palace was immense. It might be some time before the guards returned to let him out. The men in the room with him silently backed out of the way as Oba went back to his spot against the wall opposite the door and sat down. They stood watching him. Oba watched back as he tore another chunk off the rat with the teeth at the side of his mouth. They were all fascinated by him, he knew. He was almost royalty. Maybe he was royalty. He was a Rawl. They had probably never seen anyone as important as him before, and were in awe.
You said they don't feed us.
He waved what was left of the limp rat at their silent stares.
I'll not starve.
He pulled off the tail and discarded it. Animals ate rat tails. He was hardly an animal.
You're not just an oaf, Crooked Teeth said in a quiet voice filled with contempt. You're a crazy bastard.
Oba exploded across the room and had the man by the throat before anyone could so much as gasp in surprise. Oba lifted the squealing, kicking, crooked-toothed criminal up to where he could glare eye to eye. Then, with a mighty shove, Oba rammed him against the wall. The man went limp as the rat. Oba looked back and saw that the others had backed away against the far wall. He let the man slip to the floor where he moaned as he comforted the back of his shaved head. Oba lost interest. He had more important things to think about than bashing this man's brains out, even if he was a criminal. He went back to his place and lay down on the cold stone. He had been ill and might not be fully recovered. He had to take care of himself. He needed his rest. Oba lifted his head. When they come for me, wake me up, he told the four men still silently watching him. It amused him to see how fascinated they were by having nobility in their midst. Still, they were common criminals. He would have them executed.
There's five of us and only one of you, one of the men said. What makes you think you'll ever wake up again after you close your eyes?
There was no mistaking the threat in his voice. Oba grinned up at him. The voice grinned with him. The man's eyes widened. He swallowed and backed away until his shoulders smacked against the wall. Then he shuffled sideways. When he reached the far corner, he slid down and pulled his knees up close to himself. Whimpering, tears running down his cheeks, he turned his face away and hid his eyes behind a trembling shoulder. Oba laid his head down on his outstretched arm and went to sleep. Chapter 42 Faint footsteps coming from behind the door woke Oba from his nap. He opened his eyes, but he didn't move or make a sound. The men were peeking out the opening in the door. When the distant footsteps sounded like they began coming closer, all but one man moved back. The single man remained at the door, standing watch. He stretched up on his toes, gripped the bars, and pressed his face close, trying to get a better look down the hall. Off in the distance, Oba could hear the metallic clangs and echoing squeals of doors being unlocked and pulled open. The man at the door remained motionless for a time as he watched. Then he suddenly stepped back.
"They turned this way. They're coming this way," he whispered to the others.
All five of the men huddled closer on the far side of the room. Whispers passed among them.
"But what if a Mord Sith comes in instead?" one of the men whispered.
"Makes no difference to us," another man said. "I know some about their kind. Their magic works to capture those with the gift. It makes them safe from magic, not muscle."
"But their weapon will still work on us," the first said.
"Not if we all overpower her and take it away from her," came the insistent whisper in answer. There are five of us. We're stronger, and we outnumber her.
But what if...
What do you think they're going to do with us?
One of the others whispered in a heated voice.
If we don't take this chance, we're as good as dead in here. I don't see what other chance we have. I say we do it and get away.
There were nods in turn from each man. Satisfied, they straightened and moved off to different parts of the room, making it appear as if they wanted nothing to do with one another. Oba knew they were up to something. One man took a quick check out the opening again, then moved away from the door. One of the other men came closer and jostled Oba with the side of his foot.
They're back. Wake up. You hear?
Oba moaned, feigning sleep. The man nudged with his foot again.
He wanted us to tell you when they came back. Wake up now.
He stepped away when Oba stirred, yawning and stretching to pretend he was just then waking. The men, all except the one who had already seen more than he wanted to see in Oba's eyes, glanced his way before they settled on a spot to stand. While they waited, they struck slouching poses, trying hard to appear detached and disinterested. Down the passageway, two people spoke in words Oba couldn't quite make out, but he could hear their voices well enough to tell that their brief conversation was no more than businesslike. The footsteps finally stopped just outside the door. A key turned in the lock. The clang from the bolt as it snapped back echoed through the hall. The men cast quick glances to the door. Outside, a man grunted with the effort of a strong tug. The door grated as it yielded, admitting more light. Oba was astonished to see a woman silhouetted in the doorway. Outside in the hall, the big guard with her used the candle from a holder on the wall to light his lamp. While the woman stood just inside the door, casually appraising the men to each side, the guard brought the lamp into the room and hung it on the wall to the side. The lamp threw harsh light across the men's faces and revealed the grim, impenetrable reality of the confines of the rough-hewn stone room. Oba saw then, too, what a truly mean and nasty-looking lot the men were. With cunning animal eyes glinting out from the shadows, they all watched the woman. In the bleak lamplight, Oba saw that she was wearing the strangest outfit he had ever seen, skin-tight red leather. Tall and shapely, she wore her long blonde hair in a single braid. Something dangled from a thin chain around her right wrist as her hand rested on her hip. Though she was not taller than the men, her commanding presence alone made her seem to tower, like some austere fury come to judge the living in their last hours. Her scowl was dark with displeasure, as any Oba's mother had ever worn. But Oba was even more astonished to see her signal with a casual flip of her hand, dismissing the guard who had unlocked the door. If it surprised Oba, it didn't faze the guard. After a last glance around at the men, he pulled the heavy door closed behind himself and locked it. Oba could hear the guard's boots against the stone floor as he departed back down the hall. The woman's cool scrutiny swept over the men around her, appraising each, dismissing each, until at last her glare descended on Oba. Her piercing stare carefully studied his face.
"Dear spirits,"
she whispered to herself at what she saw in his eyes.
"Eyes."
Oba grinned. He knew she recognized that he was telling the truth about his paternity. She could see in his eyes that he was the son of Darkin Rawl.
"Eyes."
Understanding suddenly clicked into place for him, like a knife into its sheath. And then, bellowing like animals, the men all leaped toward her. Oba expected her to cry out in fright or scream for help or at least flinch. Instead, she stood her ground and casually met their attack. Oba saw some kind of red rod, the one he had seen before hanging near her hand, spin up into her fist. As the first man reached her, she rammed the rod against his chest, pushing him back with a twist of her wrist. He dropped like a hay bale out of the loft, thud, onto the stone floor. Nearly at the same time, the others pounced from all directions in a flurry of flailing arms and fists. The woman sidestepped
effortlessly avoiding the trap of meaty arms as it snapped shut. As the men lurched around, hastily trying to renew their attack, she moved with cold grace, meeting each man swiftly and methodically, and with staggering violence. Without turning, she drove her elbow back into the face of the closest man as he tried to seize her from behind. Oba heard bone crack as his head snapped back, throwing a long string of blood against the wall. The third man to the side was checked by her strange red rod against his neck. He crumbled, holding his throat, crying out in a choking, gurgling blubber. Blood frothed at his mouth as he twisted on the floor, reminding Oba of nothing so much as the way the snake in the swamp had wriggled in death. Eluding another lunge, the woman spun away, past and over the man on the floor. As she did so, she hammered the heel of her boot down, smashing his face to finish him. As she swung around, she delivered three rapid strikes to the neck of the fourth man. His eyes rolled back in his head before he slowly started corkscrewing down. Her legs swept his feet from under him, pitching him face forward. His forehead smacked the stone floor with a sickening crack. Her economy of motion, the easy-flowing evasion followed by a swift and brutal counterattack, was fascinating to watch. The last man flew at her with his full weight behind the lunge. She wheeled around, backhanding him across the face so hard that it spun him around like a top. She snatched him by the hair at the back of his head, jerked him from his feet, and with a thrust of that strange red rod into his back, drove him to his knees. It was Crooked Teeth. He shrieked louder than Oba had ever been able to get anyone to shriek. Oba was amazed by her ability to inflict pain. She held Crooked Teeth by the hair on his knees before her as he screamed in desperate agony, begging for release as he tried without effect to twist away from her. With a knee in his back, along with the red rod, she bent his head back to control him as easily as if he were a child. And then, as she looked up very deliberately into Oba's eyes, she pressed the red rod against the base of the man's skull. His arms thrashed out in a crazy fashion as his entire body convulsed as violently as if he'd been struck by lightning. He went limp, blood running from his ears. Finished with him, the woman released her fist from his hair and let him pitch forward to the stone floor. It was clear to Oba by the boneless way he fell that he was already dead and didn't feel the heavy impact against the unyielding stone. It was all over in what seemed like no more than five heartbeats, one for each man killed. Blood everywhere glistened in the light from the lamp. All five men lay sprawled in awkward positions around the room. The woman in red leather wasn't even breathing hard. She stepped closer. "Sorry to disappoint you, but you won't escape that easily." Oba grinned. She wanted him. He reached out and grabbed her left breast. With a grimace of rage, she lashed her strange red rod down on the top of his shoulder beside his neck. Oba reached out with his other hand and grabbed the other breast. He gave them both a firm squeeze as he grinned at her. "How could you not?" She fell silent as some profound inner understanding suddenly filled her expression. Oba liked her breasts. They were as nice as any he had ever held. Still, she was quite the unusual woman. He had a feeling that he would learn many new things with her.